Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Ambivulous, a show where we discuss a variety of topics about alcohol. From beer styles, the brewing process, distillation and spirits, and even liquor laws, there's a fascinating world to discover. Joining me today is Marty Lee of Noodle Zip in downtown Bismarck, North Dakota. On today's show, we talk about soju. I'm your host, Connor Brecky. Let's all raise a glass to the Ambivulous. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show, and it is my pleasure to introduce Mr. Marty Lee, owner of Noodle Zip in Bismarck, North Dakota. Thank you so much for joining the show with me. I appreciate it.
Nicely. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much for having me here, Connor.
And we're going to have a great time today because we have a new drink to talk about. It's a Korean drink called soju.
That's right.
And it's very delicious. It's got a very good characteristic, good flavor. It's something that I'd like to kind of bring to the area more knowledge of because I don't really know where else you get it, to be honest with you. Everybody knows sake, but this is something a little more special to us. So I guess let's kick off with what is soju in short?
Okay, so the short version of soju, just basically a distilled liquor, a pure, you know, tasteless, scentless, with a little bit of flavoring, so off sweet. But it is a traditional, affordable drinks that you can get in Korea.
So soju, the name actually refers to like how it's made kind of as far
that's
as like,
right. Traditionally, so in Chinese character or in old Korean means burning.
And that has to do with basically the heat of distillation, if I'm not
right. It's a it's the process of distilled grains, usually rice. That's what we have most abundance from the history of Korea, rice, barley. You put it all together, let it ferment it. You make it first, the base liquor, which is makgeolli or sake or clear liquor. And then you put that into a big pot of boiling, a clay pot, and then you just distill it until you have it. And you have this dew. Alcohol has a little less boiling point than the water itself. So it just, you know, all the vapors collected all together, and then you put them into one little jar, and there you go. So you have your traditional soju.
The soju has an interesting history. It goes back to, like, if I'm not mistaken, like the 13th century or so.
And that's right.
Goryeo.
Yep. The funny thing is Goryeo is the country where they pronounce Korea now, because before Goryeo, they didn't have the import and export. But with the Arabs, they started calling Goryeo, and then it became Korea.
Oh, okay. So the word just kind of twisted
and then became Korea. Just
evolution of a language right there.
So soju wasn't existed before 13th century. It came with the Mongolian army, where they have Yuan dynasty, it's China era. And they had a huge army, and they conquered from Arab to China to Korea, which is the Korea. And they brought this distillery style of alcohol from Arabs, Persia, the Iran, Arab, through the Silk Road. They came up with a better way to preserve alcohol because Mongolians more used to drinking fermented instead of distilled because they didn't have the technology to distill the alcohol process that time. So they brought, when they conquered the Arab, they see this technology. They would like to, put it together. And they love alcohol in general. Mongolian army, they consume a lot of alcohol, and they're known for it because they do a strong, hard fight.
Yeah, those guys were...
those guys are true barbarians.
Alcohol just makes sense in that aspect. Right.
And, Korea didn't have it any distilled until the Mongolians, they brought in. And at three places, at Kaesong, and also Andong, and also Jeju Island, three military spots where they set up their bases. They're forced to go to the Japan, Jeju, for instance, and Andong, for instance. They built an army base there. And then when they built the army bases, one thing they need to is having alcohol with them.
Of course. Definitely. Speaking of alcohol, for my research is traditionally the alcohol content was a little higher until prohibition, I guess, in the modern sense.
Right.
Alcohol was mandated to be lower, and then it's kind of going through a revival stage or right. has gone.
Right. Its traditional alcohol volume was anywhere from 40 to 30% because it's pure distilled. And then when you distilled, traditional way of distilling soju is not a continuous. It's only once. So when you, you know, put the alcohol once, it gives you somewhere in the 45% to 30% range. And then they just kept it in the glass bottle or let it ferment it, let it age it, I would say. So the yield on these liquors are 10 to 20% compared to what you put it into it. So it's traditionally a drinks for very, very higher royal classes, luxury people, kings and royal families who can afford these drinks, because in Korea, you can't even eat rice at your table at your dinner. You know, if you are wealthy enough to burn those rice and turn them into wine, and then you have to burn those wine to make the soju. So it's quite a process, and, you know, a lot of the resources, labors and money. So yes, it is very traditional, but it wasn't really famous until 1900s that soju got really settled down to normal people.
So with the rise of soju now in modern popularity, are there any specific things a person should know when serving and drinking it, or serving and receiving it? I know there's some kind of traditions being with like older people versus younger people and guests versus not guests and
right.
different things.
Korean way of drinking, they call it juto. Not just necessarily in soju, but it goes to the all alcohol, beer, you know, spirits, wines. But traditionally, you have to pour with two hands if you're younger. And the receiver, if you're older or if you know this person, then you can just receive it with one hand. But if you are definitely younger, serving to elder or older, or, you know, the person you've never seen it before, it's a proper etiquette to use two hands to pour that soju, and only to the 70% to the little shot glass they give you when you go to drink in soju. It used to be 90%, but 70% is where everybody go now, so you don't get over drinking and you keep pouring to build those connections with it.
Right.
When you keep pouring back and forth, you take a shot. If you put it too full, you get drunk too fast,
right.
then you don't have this social time. So, but by pouring 70%, and it's just perfect match for that shot glass, and then you just keep pouring and having fun all night.
Because this is supposed to be a gathering and an exchange.
That's
Everyone's
right.
supposed to be engaged in conversation, mm-hmm. everything. You can't, yeah, like you said, you can't do it if you're smashed out of your mind.
Right, right.
Well, maybe you could, but
right.
you know, to each their own, no judgment there.
Right, right.
Soju, for the most part, is served straight. I know there's some different types of ways
straight,
you can drink
cold,
it.
Cold, yep.
Like the, oh, there's kind of a version of a sake bomb, I think.
That's right. A mixed drink in Korean called poktanju. Poktanju means bombs. So it's a direct translation when at Itaewon, when the foreigners and the armies coming up and they drink these bombs, right? Whiskey bombs, boilers, and then it just transferred directly into the Korean culture and started up as poktanju. Original poktanju is whiskey and beer. And in the 90s, and then it got popular, and then, you know, whiskeys and other foreign spirits are quite expensive. In Korea, still in the early 90s and late 80s, they were not as rich or wealthy as it used to be. So, you know, working class people started mixing soju and the mekju together, which is beer, and then they call them somek. Because it's soju and the mekju together, you usually, your ratio is very, very to person to person to family to family and your drinking style. Right. Some people mix half and half. Some people mix just a shot of soju in a full glass of beer. So that's how you can easily consume alcohol without feeling all the harshness of the soju. And then it drinks well with the beer too. So it's got really, really popular, and you can find the somae everywhere, every corner of Korean bars nowadays.
I'm yet to actually try that particular version. I did visit Korea and I did have soju, and I do remember the, you know, my hosts doing the serving with me and everything. So that was a great experience.
Right.
For some reason, the beer, soju, and chicken wings spot we did
sticks out really well.
But
beer's a little too light, soju's a little too strong, and then chicken is greasy, so it cuts down perfect.
And we were watching Olympics, too, on
the
big screen TV, so that was pretty nice.
Good times.
Like, currently, soju's picking up again. The brand Jinro,
yep.
I know that's the kind you guys have here, and it's really good. Is there anything about that particular brand? Why it's that brand, or is there anything special, or is that just the kind of group that just got it right?
I would say they're the pioneer of the soju market. In the early 60s, it was something called different and owned by a family. And then a big group of people coming in, and when they transferred the, you know, company work, they changed the name to Jinro in 1966. They were fighting against one company called Muhak and Samhak, but those were companies were very small distillery. They didn't have the modern technique. They didn't have a modern distillery tanks. They didn't have, it was more like a home brewed and a bigger scale. But Jinro came out with this modern technology. They've seen it from other countries like Japan's and China's or other Western country that has more, you know, modern way of technique. So they were able to process just not by a single bottle. They were able to produce tens and thousands of bottles a day. So the number of the quantity is distribution. It just couldn't go against with the other company. So from 1970, it was a solid, rock solid company from now on until, you know, failure of Jinro's, CEOs, and he was doing other things with the construction and the wholesale market that his family wasn't doing. So when Height, another big giant beer company, consort at Jinro at back in the early 2000s, they become a mega, mega company, because you meet this number one selling Korean soju company plus number one selling beer company in Korea meet together. Back when they just got together, it was only 50% of market. As of 2019, they own 67% of market share, the whole soju globally and Korea. So they are just, you know, I think they know how to put the flavoring right. And because of Jinro, famous Jinro that was success from 70s, it was kind of an automatic winning for them to, it's more like a monopoly. Yeah, there's no competitors. Their price is always good. Their flavor is always not change since 70. It's the same taste that everybody had it. So, yeah, they're just champion, and, you know, soju's number one selling a spirit or liquor, they claim, by Jinro, because one average person in Korea, a man, an adult, consumes 84 bottles of soju in a year.
That's impressive.
That's an average. That's an average. So you'll have a person who doesn't drink at all, and you'll have a person drink three or four times more than that. So, of course, it's number one selling, but the consumption rate in Korea itself is just billions of a bottle, because it's cheap, readily available. It's on all street corner. You can get it, you know. Soju, of course, it's imported here, so it's expensive. But in Korea, it's $2 a bottle. It's readily available.
Well, the thing about soju, in my personal opinion, I look at the alcohol content, the ABV, and it's higher than, you know, beer, it's higher than a lot of things, but then you drink it, and for me, it's kind of like juice. Like it is. It doesn't burn. It doesn't really hit me. You, by the time you're done with your first bottle and going on your second, then it's like, okay.
Right.
It's time to slow down. But it doesn't like have that whiskey kick or anything that, which I really like. I do enjoy the smoothness, and you can taste the fruit. You can like taste it instead of just one sensation of burning.
Right. That's the good part of the modern soju, because when they buy those purest spirit at 95%, modern sojus are diluted soju versus traditionally it's distilled. So you buy this 95% pure ethanol, and then you mix with the flavorings and other chemicals, and then it becomes 25% soju. But trends are going lower and lower, because they think the soju is more like, I don't know, a drink or soda, I guess, in nowadays. When you go to company lunch, the culture was never drinking involved in it during the lunchtime. But they're now coming up with soju that has 15, 16% alcohol, just slightly higher than wines and sake. So it's easily drinkable while you're just, you know, having a lunch or having a dinner. And, you know, by putting that to lower than 50%, 15%, I mean, you are able to export it as a wine, fortified wine, instead of putting on a spirit category. So you're having more access to everywhere in the world. They, you know, they prohibit the strong alcohol, or, you know, whether it's, the Middle East, the Muslim country, or, you know, somewhere else that have stricter law. But by doing this, they can have more position in global selling. So they're coming up with similar, like a Coke Zero. They have a similar taste, but they're coming down with the more calories. So same concept goes in here. They make it a little, they keep the flavor and they keep the pureness, and then put the alcohol content a little lower so they can have more access to everywhere in the world.
Right. More marketing.
It's a way of they expanding their own business.
Now, as far as anybody who lives in the Bismarck, Mandan, North Dakota area, I haven't really been liquor shopping in a while, but I do know that Willikers has a few bottles. Other than that, I don't know where.
No, I don't think I have seen soju anywhere else other than Williker. But Williker, a couple of years ago, they only had a one or two type. Now they have several. They have flavors. They have the flavored ones, the grape ones, the, you know, strawberry ones. And also they have the traditional 24 strong, the original version of Jinro. So it's coming in. You know, I think the BTS has to do a lot of it. You know, the K-dramas and K-pop cultures. I mean, you know, think about it. K-drama was, you know, almost nothing. It's just for shows for Koreans for centuries, at, you know, 90s and 2000. But look at where, you know, BTS stands out there. And then that kind of works out as self-promotion for Korean cultures to go able to go, you know, globally. And they're doing awesome job at it.
And to segue on that a little further, Netflix.
Right. And Netflix.
A lot of Korean shows now, which are great. You guys need to check some of this stuff out.
And I'm not going to lie. When you watch those Netflix show, half the time they're drinking soju.
Right.
Not kidding. So that's how general it is. You know, it's like a drinking a beer after work, or, you know, stop buying a bar, glass of beer for Koreans. After those Koreans are hardworking people. They wake up early. They, you know, they put their, you know, 200% every single day. At the end of the day, they feel tired and they want to talk about what's happening at their job today. So they gather and they just stop by. They don't have tons of money, so just cheap and gather in every single day. Drink, talk, lots of laughter.
How you unwind from work.
That's right.
Everybody has a ritual of some kind.
Right. But then, you know, the modern sojus are definitely different than distilled, the traditional version of it, which is, you know, distilled and then kept it. And then, you know, that's what Mongolian has everywhere in Japan, China. And yeah, In the early 90s, Prohibition and the war, Korean War changed a lot of scenery of soju, too. After 50s, you know, we don't even have rice to feed our people after war. Very, very poor. We are one of the poorest country has become after Korean War. So they stopped making alcohol with the grains, period. The government set a law. And then they brought, and that brought the distilled, the traditional soju business down by 3%, from 100% to 3%. That's how many distilleries went out of bankruptcy or they couldn't do the business. They just disappeared from our culture. Luckily, you know, the rise of new Korean cultures and, you know, they're trying to bring back the traditional way brewing soju. So Andong soju, which is well known for traditional Korean soju, and Jeju and, you know, Hwayo and Ilpum Jinro. Jinro came up with this distilled new soju for the market. You know, they're anywhere from $15 to $30 a bottle compared to $2. Yes, they're a lot more expensive. But, you know, the way, the process of how they make it, the effort, the energy, the time, $15 are well worth the money. And it just tastes like a light rum, light gin, I would say. It's pure distilled rice and nothing else.
Simple.
So, yeah, it's simple. Delicious. And delicious. So it gives you less hangover, too.
Yeah. It's good.
Right?
You can drink more. All right, guys. Well, we were educated with soju. We learned history. We learned some pouring methods and how to make it. All kinds of really good stuff. So if you're curious about soju at the moment, you have to go to Willikers and try and find a bottle or maybe order online. But you have an opportunity to get some to-go food from Noodle Zip. That way you can pair it with your soju. Because nothing goes better with alcohol than food, and especially Noodle Zip's delicious takeout options.
Well, thank you, Connor, for having me for a wonderful podcast session. I would, you know, recommend our definitely delicious food with the to-go. Currently, we're only doing takeout, so we cannot offer soju in dining in. But in near future, yes, definitely, we'll have some soju paired with great food that we offer. But yeah, please check us out at Facebook and, you know, order online. Now we are doing DoorDashes as well. So pick a few bottles of soju. There's lots of different flavors, grapefruit and, you know, strawberry is my favorite.
Yeah,
as well as grape.
It's my favorite.
So pick up some bottle of soju at Willikers and pick up some food at Noodle Zip and have a great dinner at the table. You know, cheers and chat. Thank you, Connor, for having me today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. I can't wait to collaborate more with you. We have more collaborations coming up, definitely. So
thank you very much.
Well, until next time, Ganbei.
Ganbei.
The Ambibulous is made possible with Castos, giving creators the tools to connect with their audience and community. The music is courteous of Pond 5, with over 25 million royalty-free stock videos, music, photos, and sound effects. There's something for every creator. Today's episode was recorded at Noodle Zip in downtown Bismarck, North Dakota. I'd like to thank Marty Lee for the use of his restaurant to make this episode possible. And of course, a big thank you to all our listeners. Thank you for all of your support. Until next time, cheers.